Hi, it's Tim Emerson of Kuan Yin Healing, and I'm talking today with Paula Umel. Paula is an RN and a natural health educator. For the past 25 years, she's been working primarily with women, 30 years and older, on functional medicine nutrition consults. In particular, she looks at their lifestyle and their health symptoms, helping them through things like autoimmune diseases, cancers, and diabetes so they can aid their own self-healing. Today, though, we're going to talk about specifically yoga for the emotional healing with sugar and junk addiction, a really interesting subject I'm looking forward to. So, Paula, are you there?
I am, Tim. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much. I want to ask you first, so what role does sugar and junk food play in our emotional challenges?
Well, that's a really good question. This is a topic I cover, I would say, with every client I work with, because it's amazing the sugar and junk food addictions we have in our culture. But sugar is an insidious little being, and it works in a few different ways in the body with gut health as well as neurological health, which you can't kind of separate the two of them because they go together. But what I like to tell my clients is how sugar and junk food feed our gut microbial health in a way that we don't want it fed. And I don't like to use the word good gut microbes and bad gut microbes, but it's the easiest way to explain it. When we eat sugar and junk food, it literally feeds the gut microbes that we don't want flourishing in large amounts. And it kills off those gut microbes that we do want flourishing in large amounts. And then what happens is the good gut microbes that we want to have in large quantities in our gut are what produce the neurotransmitters that keep us feeling peaceful and calm, help us sleep at night. And when we kill them off with sugar and junk food and we support the growth of the bad gut microbes, they release chemicals into our system, neurotransmitters, et cetera, that make us feel agitated. Anxiety can contribute to depression. They keep us awake at night. And so to get that sugar and junk food out of the diet really helps to ease those types of mental health, emotional symptoms that people suffer from.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, this is like the contributing to the leaky gut syndrome that people talk about is increasing chronic inflammation. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yes. And that's another component of it, besides the gut microbes, is that one cell thick lining that we have throughout our digestive tract that's really the protective mechanism between ourselves and the outside world, because our food that we take in never really comes in contact with the inside of our body. It comes in contact with the inside of the digestive tract, and that one cellular lining is what protects anything in that food that shouldn't be in our system as of itself until it's digested down. And when we destroy that one cellular lining of our gut through bad eating habits, again, I don't like using the word bad, through unhealthy, unwhole eating habits, it contributes to that leaky gut syndrome that allows things to flow into our bloodstream and then into the rest of our body that isn't meant to be there.
I have heard it said that sugar is a drug. How does that create emotional states?
Well, with the gut microbe that I explained is part of it, but then the other part of it is how sugar, when we take in refined foods, be it sugar or anything else, the refined carbohydrates that are so prevalent in the junk food that we eat, it creates this spike in our blood sugar. And the difference would be eating an apple. An apple has a lot of sugar in it, but because of the fiber and the skin and the dense nutritional value of that apple, particularly if it's an organic apple, the sugar in the apple is released very slowly into our bloodstream. When we eat refined sugar or refined carbohydrate type junk foods, it creates this incredible spike in our blood sugar. And then when it spikes up, our body kicks into gear with insulin and glucagon to like, whoa, we got to get that blood sugar down because a high blood sugar is not a life-sustaining thing. So your body wants to pull it back down to a normal blood sugar level and create homeostasis. Well, in that process, in that release of surges of insulin and glucagon, we end up pulling the blood sugar down below what is like a normal, and that feeds the people's frenzy for consuming more sugar, because when the blood sugar has been so high and then drops so low, it triggers people to want more sugar. So it creates this yo-yo eating habit of sugar and makes the nervous system very erratic. You know, you've got these really highs and really lows in sugars, and it's this addictive pattern that people create in their eating habits. And literally all it takes is just stopping that sugar and refined carbohydrates, and your body will balance itself back out very quickly.
And of course, an addictive pattern itself is going to be an emotional challenge.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's so many components that people need to deal with on the physical level, the emotional level, the spiritual level. But when we get those things out of our body that are creating our own physiology to be kind of all over the place, crazy, it allows us to settle into ourselves so that we can then deal with the emotional component of those addictions that we've created with physical craziness in our body.
It's really interesting, Paula. I first became interested in the connection between what we eat and our emotions when I was complaining to a friend of mine that every afternoon my productivity just dropped. I would get tense, I would get irritable, I'd get frustrated right around 4 o'clock every single day. And he said to me, "You're skipping lunch, aren't you?" And he was right. And I just started eating a good lunch, and I didn't get frustrated and irritable at 4 o'clock anymore.
Because your blood sugar had hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a common complaint that I hear from people, but it's not usually because they skip lunch. It's usually their lunches are not particularly healing, cell-nourishing foods.
So what things would be included in junk food? I'm guessing like potato chips.
Well, I usually tell people, and this is like a hard line comment to make to people, but I usually tell people anything that is in a bag, box, can, any processed food that was made in a factory, I don't care if it's considered a health food, start from that space. And I educate them in reading labels, because if the packaged food that you are purchasing is something that has 100% whole food ingredients, it is going to be a cell-nourishing food. If it's a packaged food that is full of all sorts of refined food substances, that is going to be something that degenerates your cellular health and contributes to this junk food, sugar food addiction. So if you think about, you know, fast foods in our fast food restaurants, and then packaged foods that people buy in any sort of grocery store, drug store, convenience store. And so it's teaching label reading and being wise to what's in that food product so that you are purchasing packaged foods that are whole foods and will nourish your cellular health instead of degenerating it.
It's really interesting. I think most of us get that eating better foods and looking at labels is good for our health, but I don't think we often think about it in terms of contributing to our emotional distress.
I absolutely agree, because people think food is just something that we fuel our body with so that we can physically keep going, and they don't think about its impact on how our head feels around our moods, how our body feels around our moods. They don't even think about it in regards to how they sleep at night and how all those things are sort of like a cascade that either leads to health and wellness or leads to feeling ill at ease, diseased.
Yeah, now that you're talking, I'm thinking about all the various enzymes and hormonal things, and what we eat is going to affect those, which in turn is going to affect our moods.
Absolutely. We have to learn how our body is this amazing symphony, and everything in our body all the chemicals that are inside our body that are hormonal or digestive or enzymatic for cellular reactions, all of those parts of our body work together in synergy to create health.
So I have, I'm interested to hear where yoga fits into all this. I actually have a story to share with you. I hadn't thought of this for years, but when I was in my 20s, I was practicing yoga and meditation because I had started life as a performing musician, and I was just trying to deal with the stress that comes with that. And so I wasn't really thinking about my health, because, you know, to be honest, I lived on coffee and alcohol. But at that time,
but you were having some fun.
I did, and I learned why. I learned later why you don't do that. But the point here is, when I started doing yoga, I wasn't on any kind of a quest to change my diet, but I did change my diet. Because I found, once I started practicing yoga, that I didn't feel good after I ate certain foods, and I felt better after eating other foods. And practicing yoga made me really aware of that. And so, for example, I stopped eating red meat because I just didn't feel good afterwards, for example.
That's very interesting that you say that, because you have like spelled it out completely perfectly. And the link that I gave you to a blog post to share with our listeners, that's exactly what explained. I started doing yoga years ago because I'm this crazy fitness person, and I was sick of running and lifting weights. So I thought, I'm going to try something new. I'm going to, you know, start doing Baron Baptiste power yoga, and I'm going to fire my body up that way. And within a year or so, and I've always been a healthy eater. I'm not going to say I've never eaten junk food or I didn't ever pack away ice cream, but much more attuned to what real healthy foods were. Anyhow, after about a year of doing yoga, I noticed that there were some major changes in my eating habits and being aware of what made your body feel good, like you said, and what made your body feel off, like this is not good. You know, going to a party and they're serving, you know, some sort of wedding or baby shower cake that's white flour, white sugar, and all kinds of other unhealthy ingredients, that I used to take a piece out of politeness, even though I knew it wasn't healthy for my body, but didn't want to be impolite. And then I was aware of that I didn't even take it out of a politeness anymore. Right. That doesn't feel good, and I'm not going to eat it.
Right. Yeah, I think sometimes it doesn't even occur to people that we can do that, you know. So, you know, for today, if somebody, if I'm at a networking event, you know, somebody says, here, grab a drink. I said, no, thank you, I don't drink. It's as easy as that. But we need to come to that awareness at some point.
That's it. We have to come to that awareness, and that's what yoga does, is it changes our consciousness, our mindfulness around the habits that we incorporate into our lives and how they make us feel on a physical level, on an emotional level, and on our spiritual level. And yoga just pulls that all together and makes us stronger from an inward stance to be able to say no to the things that we know don't make us feel good. And not feel bad about it, not feel like we're depriving ourselves of something because everybody else is sitting around eating a pile of cake and ice cream or, you know, throwing back several drinks in the evening. And we don't feel bad about that because we know we're going to feel good the next day.
Mm. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to learning about this. So how does yoga help us do this? How do we get into this? What do we do?
Well, I usually tell people to start off, unlike me, I'm one of those people that will just change everything quickly and I can do it hardcore. Most people need like these soft steps to kind of waltz into a change slowly and make it work for them as opposed to making these sweeping changes quickly. So I usually give clients my different yoga blog posts that I've written so that they can think about it. I like to open people's minds and plant some seeds. And then I give them little short series of poses, like 20-minute yoga series, and tell them, you know, don't even feel like you have to do the whole thing. If it's just doing a couple of poses, if it's literally getting down on the floor and doing downward dog and breathing through it for 2 minutes and then going on your way, and then over time, as you can, add in more. And that brings yoga into people's lives. And when they realize how their body starts feeling better physically and how the awareness of making changes comes to them, this consciousness that you don't even put a finger on and you don't even realize you're doing it, it's one of these things that just happens. And I've found that it works.
Nice. So what kind of shifts have people seen in their emotional challenges from doing yoga?
Well, there's the sugar and junk food addiction. And, I mean, we could go into other addictions that people have and how it helps release those addictions with alcohol and drugs and, you know, negative relationships, those types of things. But it really shifts the mindset and shifts the way you function in the world, you as a being, how you function in the world. And that's why I always recommend, across the board, I recommend yoga to clients. And I'll tell them, you know, this is a space that I have found, yoga. But if yoga isn't what works for you, if you try Tai Chi or Qigong or Taekwondo, some sort of mindfulness exercise that is an embodiment of what you are trying to do in the world to heal yourself, that will help you to move forward. And yoga is just my medicine. It works for me.
Yeah, yeah. I know I teach a self-healing course. I'm talking here about physical pain, but I do the same thing to get people moving. I actually usually ask them, yoga or Tai Chi, which would work, which is more appealing to you, and I start them off simple.
Right.
Okay. I know that you've included a video for folks. Can you share with us what's in that video and how best to use it?
Yes, I'd love to. What I did was I did a little intro of me just talking to explain the video. And then I went through a series of, I'm going to say maybe 10, 12 poses at the most, very gentle, easy poses that move the spine. So most of us don't really put our spine through the motions that it can do, bending forward, bending backwards, twisting motions, and lateral bending motions. And so there were simple yoga poses that would incorporate all of those movements of the spine, because when we get the spine moving and we open it up so it becomes more flexible, more strong, we're also moving our life force energy, which is what helps with the emotional healing. But on top of it, you know, we're moving our body, and so moving our body moves our circulatory fluids. It moves our lymph fluids. And so across the board, when we get into these yoga positions that are moving the spine, we are, you know, moving bodily fluids. We're moving our energetic self. And all of this contributes to our health. So it's very simple poses. And I did them slowly and held them for a few minutes a few breaths so that people could see the pose, and then moved on to the next. And I will talk, you know, I'll be talking them through the poses on the video.
Nice. I know sometimes people tell me, it's like, oh, you know, I really can't do that whole pretzel thing. It's like in too much pain. I can't move. And I'm wondering what your thoughts on this are. I always tell them, it's like, be very, very gentle. Just go to the first part where you feel resistance and stay there.
And exactly.
So, right. So literally anyone can do that. Just if you can barely bend, then barely bend is where you need to be. And it's not like going to the gym, no pain, no gain.
Exactly. No pain, no gain is totally off the table in this situation. It's even if you can only twist your spine the slightest little bit, tomorrow you'll be able to twist it just the slightest little bit more. So once we get our body moving, we open up our energy so that we are capable of making those movements. And it may take time. Who knows? You know, to do a backbend, a simple backbend, like I'm down on my mat and I just raise my chest up. It's not a heavy backbend, but it's people, you know, it may take you a year before you can bend very much in that pose, but it doesn't matter. Right. Because at the end of that year, your body is in a different space than what it was the year, you know, a year ago. And so all of that, I mean, that's beautiful. That is just a beautiful healing thing. So I always tell people, I did say in the beginning of the video, I'm not going to do anything, you know, like headstands and arm stands and that sort of thing. It's not about challenging ourselves that way to twist ourselves in tight little knots and stand on our head or our hands. It's about just moving the body, getting that spine moving, getting your life force energy moving, to raise consciousness so that you can say goodbye to the sugar, junk food, and lifestyle habits that are not serving you well, not healing your body.
Let's talk a little bit about more about that. Can you explain for folks how yoga raises your consciousness? It's probably going to sound a little mystical to some.
Well, I was thinking that. Yeah, it will sound a little woo-hoo, but when we move our bodies, the purpose of yoga, and I do believe the purpose of any of these mindfulness exercises, being it Tai Chi, Qigong, Taekwondo, the purpose of them is to yoke body, mind, and spirit back together, which, honestly speaking, they're never not. It's just we are not aware of it, and we don't work with them as a whole. We let ourselves become unwhole. And so when we do yoga or some other mind, body, spirit exercise, we are bringing those back together. We're raising our life force energy vibration in a way that our consciousness is, we're raising our consciousness. We're becoming higher conscious individuals. And that's what sounds sort of mystical and woohoo to, you know, to some people. But once you start doing yoga, and then if you, I looked back on it after a couple of years and was like, wow, what profound changes this has created in me. And you'll see that, you know, when you first start out, if you could just take a snapshot picture of yourself in mind, body, spirit, and how you felt and how you functioned in the world right then on that day that you started doing yoga, and then a year down the road, 2 years, 5 years down the road, take another snapshot of you as a mind, body, spirit person, and then compare it to that day one, you'll literally be blown away at how you are just different, how you function differently in the world, how you function differently inside your own body, and you feel good about that. So I can't say enough good things about it.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, one of the things that I do when I'm working with someone new is we'll have a conversation. One of the things I'll ask them is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel physically? How do you feel emotionally? How do you feel mental stress? How do you feel spiritually? And then at the end of our work together, we'll do it again. And so you're suggesting something like this for the yoga practice?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Those are questions that I always ask. They're right on my health history form. And how you feel, your energy level, how you feel emotionally, how you feel physically, when you felt best in your life around those, and why do you think you don't feel best around them right now? And how can we get at what's causing those problems and then solve them, move forward in the world as a healthier being?
Now, when you say why do you think you don't feel best now, do you mean what do they think is their theory, or do you mean that starting to address that maybe are thinking on this? The reason I asked is that what really struck me about your explanation about higher consciousness is that our body and mind and spirit are already connected. What we're really doing is reconnecting with our awareness of that. So it's not that something mystical happens. It's just simply we look in the in a better direction.
Exactly.
So when you say why you think you don't feel best is sometimes when I'm I'll talk to people about how, you know, what often what we think is the problem and what really is the problem are not the same, which is why we have a problem, why we're stuck. And I'm just thinking
Go ahead.
Sure. And I'm just thinking in terms of emotional challenges. You know, it's easy to think like, oh, you know, there's just something terribly wrong with me when the only problem is you stop skipping lunch or eat a more nutritious lunch and suddenly I feel fine again, including emotionally. So what would be your advice to someone who comes in and is like, well, that all sounds good, but, you know, I'm, you know, my body hurts, my joints don't move, I'm overweight, I'm busy, I'm so depressed, I just don't even feel like, how do we start to get out of that state?
Well, you've hit on some big ones, and it's amazing how so many people that I work with have all those things that you just mentioned, and they're like at the end of their rope. Everything is sort of flowing in a direction that's not positive, and I don't feel like I can pull myself up out of it. And so going back to that question that I said, you know, what do you think has created this? I always tell people that the physical manifestations that you're feeling, we generally know, like, what triggered them on a physical level, emotional, spiritual level. We know, and if we think deeply enough around our consciousness, we can figure that out. So even though maybe somebody won't have the answer when I ask them that, it gets them thinking.
Right.
And then I always have to tell them, you've got to start right where you are, because you are not, you know, normal weight. You are not feeling energetic. You're not getting good sleep. You know, you're not the perkiest person in the world right now. So you've got to start right where you are in the space and then take steps to move forward. And I ask them, what can you do? What can you do for the next week? Is it giving up sugar? Can you do that for the next week? Or is it, I'm going to start doing yoga. Give me one thing that you will do for the next week, and we're going to move forward from there. And usually people can come up with two or three things. Yes,
right.
I will stop that sugar, and yes, I will start doing two yoga poses every morning.
Ah, okay.
And then you just keep them rolling from there.
What about things like... if someone said, well, you know, I have a sweet tooth, I'm going to give up sugar, but I'm going to replace it with honey.
Well, that's when I reinforce, if I haven't already talked about it, but I reinforce that if you're going to give up sugar, you have to give up sugar. And people will say, well, can I just wean off? Can I start eating less sugar, less sugar, less sugar? Unfortunately, it doesn't work like that with sugar, because if you put something in your system that's going to spike that blood sugar, you are going to keep yourself on that roller coaster.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of, I'm going to just tell you right out here, it's a heartfelt cold turkey, get off sugar. But then in 2 days, you call me in 2 days and you tell me how you feel, because you are going to be flabbergasted how much better you feel, how much more energy you have, how much better you're sleeping at night when you do that cold turkey thing. And so I will get, you know, people will, can I have honey? Can I have maple syrup? Can I have, agave syrup? And, you know, there's a million and one things there that people will come up with that are more natural sweeteners. And I will say, no, you can't. This is where I'm going to tell you, you have got to be good to yourself. If you want to heal what's going on in your body, you've got to be committed to cold turkey. Now, when we get your body back into a space where it's regulating blood sugar in a healthy way, and if you want to start then putting in some more natural forms of sugar, in small, very small quantities, because human beings were not meant to be packing sugar away in large quantities. So if you can then do that and enjoy it, maybe it's a half a teaspoon of raw local honey in your herbal tea, that sort of thing. But taking gobs of sugar, gobs of honey, maple syrup, and there's a lot of sweeteners that I tell people to stay away from completely. And then people will always ask me about the stevia thing, because stevia has been promoted as a non-caloric, non-blood sugar raising form of sweetener. And I have to tell them to back off and leave that alone as well, because when we put sweetness in our mouth, our bodies are expecting that, because your mouth is always in communication. You got food in your mouth and you're chewing. It's always in communication with our brain, and our brain knows what's in that mouth. It knows the flavors, and it's sending messages to our digestive tract and to the rest of our physiology that this is what's coming. So you put stevia in your mouth, and your brain is telling your body something sweet's coming. So your body gets all geared up for, woohoo, I got sweet coming. And then sweet doesn't come. And then it triggers you to want more sweet. So you haven't put in anything that's caloric or blood sugar stimulating. But the after effect of it's going to be, you're going to be reaching for that candy bar or that donut or that soda.
Right.
And it's the same thing that artificial sweeteners do when people use aspartame and saccharin, and it does the same thing. It just gears your body to like, okay, well, where's my sugar?
Right. Yeah, alcohol works the same way for an alcoholic. Instead of having two drinks and going, oh my God, no, that's thanks, I'm tipsy and I feel, I'm, you know, no more. It triggers that whole, oh my God, we need more. And
exactly. It's a downward cascading spiral.
Right. I wanted to ask you too about movement. Actually, I'm sorry. One of the things while we're on the sweetener, you know, I work a lot with people who are in chronic pain. And one of the things that we talk about is helping them understand that, you know, because being over, you know, in our culture, 2/3 of people are overweight, 1/3 are obese. But even just overweight, that we tend to think of that it's not a big deal. But if you're in pain, that fat, especially abdominal fat, actually is increasing your chronic inflammation.
Absolutely.
So what would be the impact then emotionally of that process?
Well, there's a couple of things that are rolling through my head here. The constant inflammation in the body is, when we inflame the body, we're inflaming the whole body. And so your neurojunctions are, in the way we perceive the world around us, are going to be in this heightened alert state because our body's inflamed. And our body inflamed is our immune system basically on steroids and wanting to, you know, protect us from everything. And so all those sensual things in our body, including the way we feel things, are heightened. So you're going to feel pain more. And sugar contributes to that in the very same way. It increases inflammation. It increases those neurotransmitters, the chemicals that are being released in your gut by the microbes that we don't want in huge quantities. Well, those microbes are going to be in huge quantities because we're feeding them with sugar and junk food. And so the neurotransmitters that they're releasing are going to increase our pain perception, because it is the chemicals that we don't want in our body. It's not the pacifying, the peaceful, calming chemicals that keep us feeling at ease.
So we're not merely not eating healthy. We're actually making ourselves feel worse and alienated ourselves from the peaceful.
That's correct.
Wow. It sounds
and it's
bad.
Amazing. I know it does. And that's what I always tell people, like, see this in a positive light. Don't be thinking like, you know, doom and gloom has been just dropped in my lap. this is like a very positive awakening thing. Wow, now I know what I can do. I have so much power here myself to make myself feel better. And I'll give you an example of a lady I worked with this summer. And she told me all about her eating habits in her adult life. And sometimes it just amazes me that, you know, people go through years of their adult life not putting anything nourishing in their body, even on a regular basis. And so she was very committed to it. She said, I'm on board, and I'm going shopping, and starting tomorrow, I am 100% whole food eater, and I am going to feed my body cells, feed my gut, feed me in a way that's going to be healing. So I was like very excited for her, waiting to see her responses. And a couple days later, I got an email from her, and she said on the night she had been at my house, she went out on a junk food binge. It was her last, like, raha.
Mm.
She said she felt so horrible the next day that she couldn't even believe. She was glad she did it, because she said there was a really consciousness raising awareness for her. And for 3 days, she had been eating whole foods, nothing but whole foods, and she bought organic. I mean, she went right to the letter with everything, and she said, in 3 days' time, I cannot tell you how much better I feel. I don't have the mood swings. I'm not turning into this grumpy bear in the afternoon at work. I'm sleeping better at night. And she's like, 3 days later, I can even tell you my skin is starting to look clearer. And I had to call her up. I'm reading this email, and I had to call her up and just say, that's what I'm saying. Your body was meant to be fed real, not processed, packaged, sugary junk. And right. When you do, you flourish.
I think that's one challenge, too, that people, it's easy to think that giving up sugar and junk food is going to be depriving me of pleasures. But as someone who's done this a long time ago, there are all these little joys that you don't know if you're still on the sugar train. So, for example, I'll often snack on like carrots, and carrots are incredibly sweet.
Oh my God, they are!
But you don't taste, you know, it's like candy. But you don't taste that if you're used to, you know, to eating all the sugar, for example.
Yes, when your taste buds are used to that refined, highly concentrated sugar, a carrot's kind of blah to you. But when you stop, all of a sudden, all the fruits and berries and carrots and beets and those types of food that really are high in natural sugars, they're an explosion of excitement in your mouth, this taste that's incredible. And once you cleanse your palate and cleanse your body of those yucky foods, you know, it's a whole new experience eating the foods that we are meant to eat.
Yeah. Now I know why we have two rabbits. I know why the rabbits go nuts every time we walk out with bananas.
Yes. We were just talking about that last night with bats, fruit bats that eat fruit, and how when you hand them a banana, they go nuts. They're happy.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about is we were talking earlier about movement in a couple different contexts. Again, working with people in chronic pain, one of the things that I often share with people is that I know that, and it's because of the inflammation response, probably not a place to get into all of that, but I know that your body is telling you this hurts, don't move it, but you have to move it or the pain will increase in an appropriate way. That's an important part of healing is movement.
Right.
But additionally... And I hadn't thought of this in terms of this until you mentioned that. But again, sorry to bring alcohol into all this, but it just this my experience is that we tell people in early recovery, move a muscle, change a thought, get up,
ooh,
move,
I like that.
You will feel better. And yeah, I wonder if you could speak to that in terms of yoga.
Well, it's funny because you know when you throw out the word exercise to people, most people like shrink back and like, no way, that sounds like work. I don't do that. And I always tell people, like, let's just take that right off the board. We're not even going to talk about exercise. It's movement. It's movement of your body, because movement of your body is a magical thing. Your body was meant to move. So those people who have been stagnant for a long time, that have chronic levels of pain, for whatever reason, however they got there, once they start moving their body, even in just little bits and pieces, you're moving the life force energy, you're moving the circulation, you're moving the lymph. So all the toxins that accumulate in our body because of stagnation, they're accumulating in your joints, in your muscle tissues, in your bones, in the junctions between your neurons, the neural junctions where your, you know, your mood chemicals fire. All of those areas of your body, you know, in the cells, in the inter and extracellular space, everything is collecting toxins because we're not moving, we're stagnant. It's like a human body that's stagnant and becomes constipated. It's constipation of the whole body, body fluids. So once you get the body moving and you get those fluids moving around your body, you're getting those toxins to move out of tissues, move into your bloodstream so that they can be eliminated through your breath, through your kidneys, through your colon and solid waste products. And just the movement itself is giving you that that pain reduction, because you are moving those toxins out of the way. So it's going to contribute to relieving pain in the body.
As well as improving our mood chemicals.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mood chemicals, you move your body, and that's one of the things your body does. It's an ecstasy thing. It produces more neurotransmitters that are of a feel-good nature. It ups the endorphins, the serotonins. It gets that serotonin-melatonin cycle back into balance. And that reduces pain, makes us feel good, decreases anxiety, decreases depression.
Cool. Yeah, we don't usually think of all that. I know that I learned a long time ago by accident. Honestly, I just wanted to be in a little bit better shape, and so I started running an hour or two every day with my dog in the forest before work. And what I didn't expect was I had so much more energy and so much more positive mood that when work got really busy again, instead of saying, well, I don't have time to exercise today, I had actually switched in my head to, I absolutely have to exercise today because I'm so busy.
Yes. Yes, I so get that. And people will give me such a hard time because we live in this culture that's all about productivity and get your butt to work and you should be making money and making progress in this world. And I will tell people, stop. I have to do yoga every day, and I have to take my dog for a walk in the woods, because I will be a better person, I will be a better natural health educator for you, a better mom for my kids, across the board. I have to. It is a part of what's important. So you're right. Keep that in the schedule.
I'm also struck by something Deepak Chopra mentioned in terms of meditation, something that I think applies here that I hadn't thought about before. He said that the ancient yogis who invented meditation weren't trying to become relaxed. They were already very relaxed. And likewise, the ancient yogis who invented yoga weren't trying to become more flexible. They were already pretty flexible. And I think it really kind of speaks to the bottom line purpose of yoga, of raising consciousness and integration of mind, body, and spirit and awareness. If I'm understanding all this correctly,
you're understanding it very correctly.
Okay.
We all understand things in bits and pieces as we open ourselves to this awareness, and so the way we understand things right here and now is exactly how we're supposed to understand them. And then, like, I look back on my understanding of yoga. I've been doing it for 27 years, and I look back on my understanding of it 27 years ago, and it's so different today. So We just keep evolving as beings and learning and growing in our wisdom around ourselves and the way we move through the world.
I think it's important too. I wonder what your thoughts are on this. You look at something like yoga and you look at some of the accomplished people, and it can feel, you know, overwhelming. I know we talked about starting slow, and I do the same thing with Tai Chi. And if people are doing it simply for their health, I said, let's not get into a whole form. I'm going to show you five key postures. I call it the Tai Chi 5 and 5. It's something that's very simple and easy and doable, entry level, and not something that's going to add to stress and overwhelm, but something very, that the whole point is just to start doing something.
Yes, you want to set people up for success. And not, I mean, obviously you're not going to like tell them to start doing in yoga. You know, the first one you teach them is the crow pose. Well, that's just ridiculous. You want to set them up for success so that they come back for more every day, begging for more, because their body feels great, their spirit is soaring, their emotions are feeling soothed, and you want them to come back.
I really like that, begging for more. If at first we don't want to, then we're begging for more. When I teach people the Tai Chi 5 and 5, they say, well, how long should I do this? What should I do next? Because there's a whole series. And I said, well, when you're doing it and you find yourself saying, I'm bored doing these poses, I want to move, then you're ready for the next one. Which talks about moving.
And that's a great way to look at it. Exactly. You need a new challenge.
And we'll show you how to move your feet.
Right. You know, you're challenging everything again.
All right. This whole idea, I don't think people usually think of yoga in terms of addressing their emotional challenges, or for that matter, yoga in terms of getting past sugar and junk food. It's a really interesting juxtaposition and solution.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny, Tim, because in our culture, I find, for the most part, and this is not across the board, but yoga has been brought on board as a fitness tool. And I can honestly say when I started doing yoga years ago, that was it. I was tired of beating my body up, lifting weights every day, and I got on board as a fitness tool. And we don't, in our culture, hear as much about the emotional benefits of yoga. So it's one of those things that kind of came in the back door for me, and like, whoo! That was nice.
Yeah. I'm trying to picture somebody saying, I don't feel good, I better do some yoga.
Yeah, that's a good prescription, a nice self-prescription. I'm going to go do yoga.
So, you know, what might, I think something that might help somebody that is to... you know, we've talked a lot about bad habits, but we can set up good habits as well. Is like, you know, it's one of the difficulties that I personally have found about giving up things. It's very hard for me to give up things. What I actually have to do is replace them, not necessarily in a sugar honey way, but for example, you know, since we've used this example already, you know, in alcohol days, I would get up in the morning and open a beer. When that went by the wayside, I still do this today. I get up in the morning and make coffee. So there was something to do, not something to not do.
Yes.
So I'm thinking for people, you know, who are new and at first that's going to be a struggle, some of the to-dos might be forming that mental association at first and then that habit. Okay, if I'm feeling crappy, I'm going to do this simple yoga pose. There must be some they could do right at work without being obvious as well, I would think. At least something. Breathing, something.
Well, yes.
Or, for me, because not all trail mixes are healthy, but I keep a, it's actually a walnut cranberry mix in the car, as well as apples. And so if I'm out somewhere and I start getting hungry, instead of stopping for chips or something like that, I'll reach for an apple and a handful of healthy trail mix, something like that. What might be your tips for healthy habits people could form?
Well, that's interesting you say that, because I've always been like one step ahead of myself in regards to where I'm going to be in the world and what's going to be available for healthy food when, you know, eating time comes around, so that when I know I'm going to be someplace that there isn't going to be healthy options, like you said, I always make sure I have something with me. And that way you're planning ahead. And I also tell people, like, don't focus on what you're giving up, because the fire that we feed is the one that's going to burn. And so if that's where your focus lies, that's what's going to be driving you crazy, because that donut, I can't have donuts in the morning anymore. Well, if you constantly focus on what you can't have, it's what you're going to want. So the donut itself, and I'm just using that as an example, it becomes a ritual. It's a habit that people do, whether it's a donut or alcohol or a chocolate bar or a soda. It becomes a ritual, and rituals are this beautiful thing, part of our lives, that gives us a sense of, you know, our purpose and our being and our groundedness. So what can you replace that donut ritual with that's going to be a healthier option for you? And like you said, the alcohol and the coffee. And just now your coffee is your ritual. It's this way that you soothe yourself, that you heal yourself. It's like your medicine in the morning. And that habit in of itself is a healing habit. You know, we think of different cultures that have tea ceremonies, whether it's a herbal plant-based tea or it's actual tea leaf teas in Asian cultures. The ceremony itself is a healing thing. So when we can create that for ourselves around a positive habit, it lets us let go of the habit that was negative, so to speak, and wasn't serving our health and our healing. So we're just creating something to replace it and not focusing on what we're giving up.
In fact, that's part of the routine. It's a coffee and then spiritual reading and then meditation and then a breakfast of usually blueberries, yogurt, and a half a cup of homemade granola, so we know what's actually in it.
Exactly. You know what's in it because you made it yourself. And that's my morning. Starts out with a cup of coffee, sitting out on my back steps. I have a little sandstone patio, and I sit there with my feet on the ground, bare feet on the ground. You know, I'm surrounded by my dogs and cats, and I just sip my coffee and stare at the backyard. I mean, sometimes this is literally a five-minute thing because I got to get moving, but it's a peaceful five-minute thing to, like, ground myself and start the day. And I'll often tell people, like, if you have something you do like that, like, I can close my eyes and I'm in the middle of some chaotic thing, you know, in traffic or something, and if I can just close my eyes even for a second and put myself back on that sandstone rock with my feet on the ground with my dogs and my cats around me and my cup of coffee in my hand and take a breath, and it's like this release moment. Okay, the world is a good place and I'm okay. So it's just coming, and I'll teach clients to do that. If, like, I'll give you an example. One of the things that I do to calm myself is I'll take my hands and put them over my heart. So my left hand and then my right hand over that, and they're over my heart. And in that moment, I'm saying something like namaste. And in my mind, I'm seeing one of my favorite places in the woods right here by my house. So in 3 seconds, I can have my hands over my heart, I'm saying namaste in my head, and I'm seeing this beautiful little spot down by the water in the woods, and in 3 seconds' time, I've changed myself from being crazy, anxious, ready to snap, to, all right, I've got my calm back.
Yeah, that's nice. I used to, when I was working for corporations and the corporate culture, I would make a sense of, okay, I'm in this tense room, but these walls are artificial, and outside there's ground, and the ground extends to the wild places, and I'm actually in the middle of nature, even though it doesn't visually look like that right now. And it would.
That's an awesome, yeah. That's a good thing you did for yourself. And it's teaching people those things that sometimes they don't even, you know, they don't have the thought process in that moment or whatever. No one. You know, and just opening them up to that you can put yourself out in nature, even though you're right now in the meeting room with the board or whatever. You can just pause for a moment and just ground yourself back into that so that you can proceed with your board meeting in a space of calmness.
Right. Keeping it simple and having something at hand. One of the best I ever learned was from a maternity nurse who taught me that, smell the flowers, blow out the candle. Smell
oh,
the flowers,
I love that.
Blow out the candle.
That's so funny. Oh, maybe that I was a maternity nurse for years. So maybe that's, just our trying to keep labor patients grounded in the moment so that their birth is a beautiful experience. We come by that naturally.
Mm.
That makes sense.
Very nice. So what is somebody who's been eating sugar at all, when they go shopping, the first thing they're going to see when they get to the checkout is candy everywhere.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, that's one of the things where you, in that moment, the hands on the chest saying namaste, amen, whatever it is that works for you, and visualizing in 3 seconds, that is not what I need. One of the mantras that I tell people to use when I talk to them and teach them about how whole foods feed our cellular health and how refined, processed, packaged foods, junk foods, degenerate our cellular health, and that degeneration of our cellular health over a period of years in our lives is what creates degenerative disease. And so the mantra that I teach them around the food that you're thinking about putting in your mouth or about to raise to your mouth, is this best for my cellular health? And clients always tell me that they carry that mantra with them, and it makes them think in the moment, no, that's not. This is not what's going to regenerate my body cell health for vibrancy. It's going to actually move me closer to degenerative lifestyle diseases.
Mm.
And, I've had people call me up and say, I can't put an M&M in my mouth anymore because all I can hear in my head is this best for my cellular health. And I'm like, well, then we've been successful.
Yeah. That's interesting because the same thing happens with when we help people through alcohol is that you have ruined drinking for me. Like, excellent.
Perfect. That's what we wanted to do.
Okay. You mentioned a blog post. Tell us about that.
Well, the blog post was one that I wrote a few years ago about Whole Foods' impact. It's actually titled Why I Love Yoga and Other Thoughts on Whole Food, Whole Health Healing. And I wrote it for my local food co-op. I write articles for their newsletter. And it was just about the impact yoga had on my health, how when I looked back to that snapshot picture of myself when I first started doing yoga and I wasn't making conscious choices around food, that I would grab that piece of yucky cake at a wedding or bridal shower or whatever and the ice cream that went along with it and whatever, and that how when I looked back and didn't even expect yoga to make those changes in my life, or wasn't even consciously aware that it was happening, that I realized I wasn't taking those things. I was making conscious choices to not do that. And I should say conscious choices because it's not necessarily like I didn't think through the process. I probably did to begin with. That cake is not healthy for me. I'm not going to eat it. And then after years, it was more like this subconscious thing. My mind was saying those things and I wasn't even aware of it and wasn't even making the choice to take that piece of cake anymore. Does that make sense?
It does. So consciousness has come up frequently here. And I'm thinking, now that we talked earlier about awareness, that we think of consciousness, we think of this higher mystical thing. But if, what I keep hearing is like, it really just starts making you a lot of things that happen without us really thinking it through, it just kind of puts them in your awareness so that you are making, in fact, conscious choices because you are drawing in better consciousness.
Yes, absolutely. It is all about our awareness. And it's funny, right now, and this is a good thing, but I do chuckle about it, is we have this whole mindfulness movement in our culture. And mindfulness is yoga. And that's, you know, that's what I say to people. Like, that's so funny to me that we have to label it as mindfulness because it's yoga, and yoga creates mindfulness. But it is making us aware so that we as a human being can choose the action that we're going to take in regards to that food or that alcohol, as opposed to just reacting on an emotional way and just grabbing at it and eat it and not thinking. So instead of reacting, we're actually making conscious choice. We're choosing how we're going to function in that moment.
Nice.
And I can't recommend yoga enough for that very, very process.
Wow. This has been really enlightening, Paula. I really appreciate you're taking time to share all this.
Well, I appreciate you inviting me and having me here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So we'll have that invite people to check out the video link of the yoga demonstration and your blog post. And if they want to learn more about you, they can go to PaulaYumellRN.com, and we'll have a link to that as well.
Yes, thank you, Tim.
Thank you. I've learned a lot, and I bet everybody else has too. I would not have made these connections without this talk. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Have a nice day, everyone.
Yep. You too, Paula. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, this has been an amazing interview. I wouldn't have connected yoga to emotional healing and sugar and junk food, but Paula has really opened my eyes here. So she started by talking about sugar and the impact it has on the microbes in our gut, the leaky gut syndrome that people often refer to that contributes to the inflammation in our bodies. And that eating sugar and blood foods plays havoc with our blood sugar. That the craving for that, the addiction, can contribute to a frenzy, a kind of yo-yo system of eating. And that addictive pattern then sets up the emotional challenges. So it's really much of the role of blood sugar there. She defined junk food as anything that comes into a bag, a box, or a can. That's pretty clear. And to read labels. We're looking for whole foods rather than refined things. And the key here is our cellular health. So, fast foods aren't really nourishing for our cells. And because of that, the way the emotions are, pretty much an electrochemical system in our body in many ways, that we create an emotional distress when we're eating sugar and junk foods. That affects our headspace, it affects our body, it affects our the hormones and the enzymes that are being created in our bodies, and that, of course, affects our mood. I shared with Paula that when I first started doing yoga, I found that certain foods, such as red meat, I just didn't feel well after I ate them. So I stopped doing that for only reasons other than that. And she shared that she was running and doing weights and into power yoga, but what she actually found was the more the good feelings that she had from her yoga practice, and it turned her off to things like white sugar and white flour and so forth. But her key thing, she came back to us, is that yoga changes the mind, that it changes our consciousness, and that the important key aspect of that. So if we're stronger inward, we don't feel so bad, we don't feel deprived, and we'll feel good the next day. So how does somebody start with that? She recommends a soft start, and she shares a blog post on this where she starts people off with a short series of poses. Maybe they work 20 minutes a day. And bring the yoga in gradually like that, so that it just happens. We talked about sugar is very much a drug. Whether we're trying to get rid of alcohol or drugs or sugar or junk food, that there's you know, there's a relationship there. She says that you as a being is how you function in the world. So anything that helps us focus on who you are as a being, yoga, tai chi, taekwondo, she mentioned, these are all things that help us do that. So the poses, she shared, helps us to move the spine forward or backward or lateral. You know that in our culture, we spend a lot of time sitting, and it's not natural for our spinal health. She stressed that moving helps to move our life force energy, but just moving the body helps the circulatory system. It helps the lymph system works. It helps our energetic self as well. And so I think sometimes when folks are new to yoga, we have this idea of, you know, turning ourselves into pretzels, right? That's going to be painful. But she really stressed that no, not at all, that it's not the pretzels, it's not the pain. You don't have to be doing that kind of thing. That the key thing is actually for yoga is yoking the mind, body, and spirit, that they're already connected. So you don't have to somehow accomplish that. But rather, what we actually do is increase our awareness of that existence, of that connection. This increases our life force vibration. It increases our consciousness of what's going on, of just simply being aware of what's already going on. And that creates a higher sense of being. It creates a wholeness. And that's probably the most interesting description of higher consciousness I've ever heard. She's talked about the importance of tracking our progress so that we can feel good. So maybe at first rating, here's how I feel on a scale of 1 to 10 physically. Here's how I feel emotionally. Here's how I feel spiritually and so forth. And then following that so that you can see, oh my God, I'm actually making progress here. You know, when are the times when I felt best? She asked people, you know, why do you think, you know, you don't feel at your best? What has helped create this and help people really address the emotional challenges that lie at the basis of their physical symptoms? You know, she says we usually know what has triggered us physically, emotionally, spiritual, if we get thinking about it. So, and she's starting off small. She goes, let's just do one thing. If you just gave up sugar this week and maybe try two or three things with yoga poses. I asked her about, what about substitutions? You know, maybe bringing in honey as a more natural food than sugar. And she stressed, you know, really you need to give it up. That it's not the matter so much of the origin of the sweetness, but rather what it does to your blood system, to your blood sugar. That weaning off or just trying to work it less doesn't really work because it still hits your body. You still have that craving. And if you give it up, their energy increases, you feel better, you'll sleep better, which is, of course, much better for your health. So the problem, as she described it, was really the blood sugar spikes. And if we eat substitutes, still, we have that brain sending out that sugar message. And when it doesn't get it, it also reacts at a cellular level. I asked her about, you know, since we were talking about sugar, you know, certainly in our in the U.S., you know, a third of the population is obese. Two-thirds of people are overweight. And I know from working with my chronic pain clients that abdominal fat actually sends out inflammatory chemicals. And I asked her about this at the emotional level. And she says, absolutely, that it affects our neurology. And that chronic state of inflammation inflames our agitates our immune system, so that we're in that kind of fight mode. We're in that constant high alert system, that we're going to feel pain more intensely, and that includes emotional pain. So we actually increase chemical aspects that make us feel worse, and we decrease the chemical things that make us feel better and more peaceful. And she gave an example of a woman who had spent years without good nourishment. And when she started working with Paula, she went on a junk food binge after, and she just felt so incredibly horrible. After just 3 days of eating whole foods, she noticed that her mood swings stopped. She stopped being grumpy at work. She slept during the night. Even her skin cleared up. I shared with Paula that when I originally gave up sugar years ago, and you know, today I can taste things that we don't normally get. We think of giving up sugar as a deprivation, but things like carrots taste very, very sweet. Bananas are super sweet. We also talked about the importance of movement. I am always stressing to folks the important aspect of movement when they're in chronic pain. But also there's an emotional aspect that if we move a muscle, we change a thought. And she says, don't think of exercise as some chore. Just think of it as movement, that the body is meant to move, that movement helps the circulatory system. It helps our lymph system. You know, we have four times as much lymph in our body as circulatory, but there's no pump for it. We have to move. And that this gets rid of the toxins. That if we don't, those toxins accumulate in our joints, in our tissues, and in our neuron junctions, which is exactly where it creates the negative effects on our mood chemicals. But when we do exercise, that it increases our endorphins, increases serotonin, the dopamine balance. And if we don't, I love this phrase, she calls it constipation of the body. We can help this by eliminating these toxins through our breath, through our kidneys, through our colons, that it will decrease anxiety and decrease depression. And I think that's really the important thing, that getting rid of the sugar and the junk food and using yoga as a tool can actually decrease your anxiety and your depression and increase your sense of peacefulness, your sleep, your sense of well-being. So exercise is truly needed. So yoga, she stressed, is a key thing for this. She says, for her case, it makes her a better educator, it makes her a better mom, that it has this overall effect. I shared that, certainly the ancient yogis who invented yoga weren't looking for flexibility. It's that success. There are other ways to do this. I sometimes use Tai Chi, for example. But in small ways, so we set people up for success. She says, you want to leave them begging for more. This is so good. What do you have more? And so she has this wonderful easing in strategy for people that creates that effect. You might think of first as, oh, I can't believe I have to do all these yoga poses. She actually has people coming, okay, this is great. What else? I want more. So, it's really, really interesting creating yoga, not just for fitness, but even to help us with our habits. A 5 minutes of breathing, or putting the hand over her heart and going to her special place and saying namaste. And I love the way she makes things so simple and clear that just getting people in that mental space, in that mental habit of asking, is this best for my cellular health? If it's not, that it's contributing to degeneration. And we talk about degenerative diseases and the impacts, but it goes, am I doing something that in fact is further degenerating my cellular health? Or am I doing something that's going to contribute to regeneration of my cellular health, and that's going to make us feel better? So it's a really, really interesting interview with Paula. I'm so glad she joined us. She has shared that she has a blog post that talks about the impact of yoga on her health, around making conscious choices around food, about the importance of yoga for consciousness. She kept coming back to this point, that it just helps us become more aware of not only in a higher being self, but just being more aware of what's going on. She said that mindfulness actually comes from yoga, about the difference between making a conscious choice or making an emotional reaction, and the key role that yoga plays in all this. I can't think of anything so simple that addresses so forcefully this What some folks see as a dilemma between conscious choice and emotional reaction. It's as simple as taking small steps to start us off doing yoga. It was a great interview. I enjoyed it very much. You can learn more about Paula from her blog post and from her website at paulayoumellrn.com, paulayoumellrn.com. And of course, there's a link to that as well. This was a great interview. I enjoyed talking to Paula, and I'm sure you enjoyed listening to her as well. Take care, everyone.